Juliet Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello, and welcome to episode 98 of Dogcast Radio. In this show, we'll be going behind the scenes at a dog-friendly bed and breakfast.
I run courses for B&B owners, and one of the things I say is, you know, there's a distinction between dogs allowed and dogs welcome, children allowed, children welcome. You know, actually think about how you can make it easier for the dog owners.
Plus, we'll have the Dogcast Radio news, and Buddy will be revealing what he thinks about the kittens who've come to live at his house. But before all that, we have an interview with Heather Rosenwald of Start Seeing Black Dogs, who is doing her very best to fight against black dog syndrome. But just what is that?
Black dog syndrome is a term that was developed here in the U.S. for the phenomenon where black dogs were being overlooked more often in rescue groups and shelters when potential adopters come in.
Yep, so they just don't get picked and they languish in the shelter then?
Exactly. Yep, they take longer to adopt out, and sadly in some cases when they're not adopted, if there are space issues at the shelter, they might be euthanized in higher numbers. So obviously something we're very concerned about.
Yeah, yeah. Now obviously I have a black Labrador, and people listening who have black dogs will be looking at them thinking, what on earth is this about? Because it's just when you first encounter it, you think, what on earth? Why don't people want black dogs?
I know. It's really strange, isn't it? We ran into that ourselves. We could hardly believe it. But then we found a lot of articles related to black dog syndrome. And in talking to people all around the country, we've found that it's an absolutely true phenomenon. The best that people can guess and the feedback we get from rescue groups and shelters is their black color sometimes makes the dogs not quite as showy as some of the other dogs that might be out there. So they might, you know, kind of disappear a little bit in a kennel type situation or a shelter where the lighting might not be the best. They're not going to show up as well also in photographs. And it's a very common problem when you try to take a good photo of a black dog. It's not always the easiest thing to do. Yep. So potential adopters looking online may not be able to really see the features of the black dog. So they kind of skip over them and look at other dogs that they can see more clearly.
Yeah, yeah. See, I have double the problem because I have a black dog and a white dog. And I can't get a photograph of the two of them. You know, they're either
right.
A white blob or a black blob.
So, yes, you need your own photo studio just for that.
I do. But, I mean, one of the things I found was black hair. When he sheds a lot, the black hair is so much easier to deal with than cream-coloured hair or lighter hair. And you think...
It is.
You know, people are missing a trick here.
We keep saying that, too. I mean, what we like to say is black dogs are the new black. I mean, if black is supposed to be slimming on you also, get two black dogs. It'll take off 20 pounds.
Definitely. Oh, I like the sound of that. I do like that.
Yes.
Now, apparently as well, black pit bulls suffer the worst, don't they, with this syndrome?
They do. We get that feedback constantly. Here in the U.S., pit bulls in general have a very, very hard time making it out of shelters and as a general rule. But on top of it, if you have a pit bull who happens to be predominantly black or a black pit bull mix, they just are not making it out of the shelters like we would like to see them. They get overlooked. Sometimes people feel that black dogs might also look a little more menacing. I've not heard that from the public when I've dealt with them, but that does seem to be a thought that might be out there. So here you've got a pit bull on top of it, and people might have preconceived notions about that breed, which so many of which are not actually accurate, too. And the black pit bulls really have a lot stacked against them, so they need advocates pretty badly.
Yeah, definitely. So I guess having encountered this problem, you set out to do something about it, and you started start seeing black dogs, didn't you?
Yes, I started the website startseeingblackdogs.com. I have 20 years of sales and marketing experience, and we wanted to put some free resources that are available to people working with rescue groups and in shelters to give them some ideas about free, easy PR marketing kinds of things they can do to increase their black dog adoptions. So if we know it's a problem and we want to get more exposure for these dogs and make sure they're not overlooked just because of their color or it's hard to take a good photograph of them, we've put these ideas out there for anyone to use free, including, I might add, some really good tips for people using simple digital or point-and-click cameras on how to get better pictures of these dogs when you're trying to show them online and get them noticed by potential adopters.
Yeah. Oh, that's excellent. So shelters, you know, can sort of access that on the website, can they?
Absolutely. They can just come to the website and everything is free for the taking. So we're encouraging you to take the information, take it for free. We have a definition of black dog syndrome on there. We recommend that rescues and shelters consider putting that definition on their homepage and even adding it to the description of the dogs that they have for adoption who are predominantly black dogs to really raise public awareness that these dogs are overlooked. We have found that when the public realizes this, I get tons of email from people who have gone out and intentionally looked for black mixed breed dogs to adopt because they just didn't know this was a problem.
Yeah.
So the public is generally very receptive and would like to have this awareness, and there's many things that shelters and rescues can do and have their volunteers do that cost them no money at all.
Yeah, yeah. I know. I think one of the things you suggested was sort of just getting out there with some black dogs and showing people they are friendly. There's nothing, you know, they don't deserve this syndrome.
Absolutely. And one way to do that, we have adoption days here in the U.S. I imagine you probably have something similar there.
Yeah.
And at adoption days, we really recommend put the black dogs closer to the front where people are coming in. Make sure that you're not tucking them away in an area where it's very shadowy. That's going to work to their disadvantage and people will not see them there. And we like to say, do a little black dog bling. So bedazzle the black dogs a little. Make sure you put a colorful bandana on them. We even have rescue groups who've sent us pictures of bedazzled bandanas where they've put different shiny things on there or some way to let the dogs just stand out a little bit more in their kennels or crates, and definitely get them out, get them on leashes, walking and meeting the public so that they can just get a little bit more high profile. Give them a chance to do the catwalk during your adoption days.
Yeah, because I mean, there are some silly ideas around. Because just before I got my Labrador, I was saying, oh yes, I'm going to have a black Labrador, and he was saying, oh, they're more aggressive, you know, the black Labradors, and it made me think, oh gosh, really? Now my dog is so soft. He's just a big lump of soft. He just wants to make friends with everybody he meets. You couldn't get a dafter dog, you know, and it's just so not true.
It's so not true, and it's sometimes when I have found that people have this kind of perception, it kind of, what I frequently hear is that it was something that was passed on to them when they were younger, that they never questioned, but it's, if we're in a world where we don't like to be judged fully by appearance, right, or summed up completely by things we can't help, and in the case of a black dog, the color of its fur, it can't help that it's a black dog, and it doesn't mean anything in terms of its personality and how approachable or wonderful it will be. It's just simply the color of the dog, they're just as marvelous as any other animal that's out there awaiting adoption.
Definitely. Well, I mean, I can say I have a black Labrador, and he's a big lump of soft. I also have a little fluffy white Bichon Frise. And she is a much more, you know, her own person. She's got her own ideas, and she's much more of a force to be reckoned with than the black dog is. So.
That's right. You have to take them as individuals, just like with people.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. If there are people listening that sort of are thinking, oh, gosh, this is awful, what can we do? Is there anything that they can do?
There are so many things that people can do. In fact, we have a section on the website, startseeingblackdogs.com, that is called What Can I Do? That gives people some ideas of easy things that they can do to participate. Volunteering for a rescue group or a shelter is a great way to help raise awareness. Maybe volunteer to print up little flyers that talk about black dog syndrome. Make sure in a shelter that they're posted by where the black dogs are, and at an adoption event, have that at a table. So if you offer to do that for a shelter or rescue group, they might be very grateful for that. definitely consider adopting a black dog next time you want to add a pet to your family. You know, so many wonderful breeds have devoted rescue groups that help make sure they don't end up in shelters and situations like that. But the black shelter dogs don't have advocates. That's what we're attempting to be and asking the public to help with, too. And then just raising awareness about black dog syndrome, letting people know that this exists, passing on the link to our website, to other websites that are out there that talk about black dog syndrome, that really educate people about it and let them know that black dogs are also phenomenal and no different than any other dog, and they definitely need our help. Yeah. And we have other ideas on the website as well.
Okay, great. Well, we'll put a link onto that. And I guess, you know, because you have made a feature of this, you know, you've focused on this black dog syndrome, you must get contacted by people who have adopted black dogs and who, you know, are so happy with the dog and they do realise that this is, it's not actually a real issue. It's just, you know, a myth.
Yes, absolutely. We hear from people all the time that send me pictures of the black dogs they adopted that tell us that this was a dog that I almost overlooked because it was indeed dark at the shelter and the dog was in the back of the kennel and I couldn't see it. And we almost missed this fantastic dog and we're so glad we came back and looked at this dog and adopted it. It's been the best pet we've ever had. We just hear wonderful, inspiring, incredible stories about these dogs that, again, are mainly, from the public's point of view, just not as visible. Mm-hmm. And so they're so pleased when they can see past these invisible shelter dogs and find them and bring them into their family.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, this is a subject that you are passionate about. Is there anything else that you would like to, you know, take the opportunity to put out there?
Oh, just that everybody can help in any little way. Even if people feel, oh, I can't, you know, devote time on a weekend to work at a shelter or go to an adoption event, or I can't foster a pet because many shelters and rescue groups really rely on foster families to help get these dogs into a nice home prior to being adopted. There's still so many things you can do in this age of the internet. Maybe you can help update listings for the dogs. Maybe you can make up some of those little cards about black dog syndrome. Whatever it is, consider contacting a shelter or rescue group and let them know that you would like to help them. It really does save lives, and particularly for these very overlooked dogs without advocates, it's just a wonderful thing to know that we've helped them, and the public can be a huge assistance with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Heather, it sounds like you've made the future a lot brighter for some black dogs.
Thank you. I certainly hope we have, and we welcome emails from all of your listeners and any black dog stories they may have as well.
I really can't understand why black dogs should be overlooked, because I actually set out to get a black dog. And I can tell you, it's wonderful being able to wear black and navy and have my dog brush against me and no dog hair shows up. We have links to the Start Seeing Black Dogs website, so if you'd like to help promote black dogs, do go and see what you can do. A stranger in town is like a white dog. He gets noticed immediately. African proverb. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Hello and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Nick.
And I'm Kate. First up, we have news of more dogs who ended up trapped. The first one was in a badger set. The dachshund in question, Lucy, was stuck underground until her owners heard a faint yelp while searching for her. Lucky Lucy was dug out by Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service, who had to obtain a special license to allow them to dig into a badger set. Apart from having rubbed the fur off the top of her head, Lucy was not injured. To be fair, she was, of course, only following her instincts, as dachshunds were originally bred to hunt badgers, and their name in German literally means badger hound.
So maybe the answer is to keep Lucy on a leash next time she looks set to go exploring. Although Lucy has an excuse for her behaviour, we can't really say the same for our next dog. Daisy, the inquisitive Staffordshire Terrier, poked her head into a tumble dryer vent in the utility room at her home in Cambridgeshire, UK. When she panicked and tried to pull free, her head swelled up, leaving her well and truly wedged in. Again, those brave firefighters came to the rescue, administering oxygen to the dog and gradually chipping away the wall to liberate her. After a vet check, Daisy was declared fit and healthy.
Well, they do say curiosity killed the cat, but clearly it only gives a dog a good scare. And a very scary crime was committed against a dog owner recently. Teenager Sam Brown was walking his greyhound, Cry, in Yorkshire, UK, when a car pulled up nearby and one of the occupants got out, pushed Sam to the ground and stole his dog. The whole family, including their other dog, are missing Cry dreadfully. Apparently the police are also looking into two other missing dogs in the area.
So what is the answer to this kind of crime? Is mandatory microchipping the answer, making it more difficult to sell stolen dogs? Or does dog theft need to be taken more seriously by police? Or do our dogs now need guard dogs of their own to keep them safe? If you have any ideas, we'd love to hear from you. You can find out how to contact us on the Dogcast Radio website or at the end of the show.
A very unusual recent headline read, "My dog killed my husband, but I'm keeping her." This story is not what it might seem, though, as the tragedy came about when Stephen Sewell and his Alsatian Doberman Cross Judy were playing fetch. Judy is partially sighted and apparently mistook her master's fingers for a stick and bit him. The bite was a bad one, but because they were on vacation, the Sewells used tissue and then a sticking plaster to stop the bleeding. In a rare development, Stephen developed septicemia from the bite, which led to inflammation of the brain, and just 1 week after the bite, he died. It shows how important it is to be aware of the potential dangers if your pet has special needs, and also to seek medical assistance if in any doubt. Meanwhile, Stephen's wife has accepted his death as a tragic accident and has no plans to rehome Judy.
And finally, to a dog who is home at last after being missing for over a year. Black Labrador Sabby, an Australian Special Forces explosives detection dog, went missing in action in Afghanistan. However, the dog was recently recovered by a US soldier on patrol. The soldier, aware that his colleagues were missing a dog, tested her out with a few specialized commands and soon realized that he had found Sabby. The dog has now been happily reunited with her handler.
And that's all the news we can handle for this week. So, goodbye.
The black dog gets the food, the white dog gets the blame. Chinese proverb. Karen Thorne runs the award-winning dog-friendly Hopton House Bed and Breakfast just down the road from me in beautiful Shropshire. She has two dogs of her own who gave me a delightful welcome when I went to talk to her about some of the issues related to running accommodation where canines can be as comfortable as humans. So first of all, how do you make a bed and breakfast dog friendly?
We have a downstairs room which is very suitable for dogs. It's got a wooden floor. It's even got a wet room so you could take your dog in there for a shower if it Brilliant. Needed it. There are some rugs in there, but you can roll them up if dogs have got muddy paws. It's also got direct access into the garden. So it's your own private access into the garden, which means you're not disturbing anybody else. And the garden's enclosed.
Oh, lovely, yeah. Because that's one of the, well, two of the worries, really. Is my dog going to bark and disturb other people? Yeah. And also, you know, it's that thing of, it's 11 o'clock at night, he needs a wee, I've got to go out in the dark and the rain, but if it's enclosed, that's brilliant.
Yeah, so you can just let the dog out. You can stay in bed and let the dog out. We do have the chickens, the free-range chickens, so we do have to ask guests to keep dogs on leash if they're likely to chase them. But most people are happy with that. And we've got walks from the door. There's a walk up around the local hill, Hopton Tittrell.
Yeah.
And that's an 8-mile circular with no stiles at all. So, as we all know, with big dogs and stiles, there's nothing worse.
No. Especially when you're about halfway round and you kind of think, oh no, yeah, I just have to go back.
You have to go back. We always put a little tub of dog biscuits in the rooms. We always have chocolates for the guests and dog biscuits for the dogs. And we provide bowls if guests ask for them. But most people tend to bring their own bedding and their own bowls and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, that sounds really excellent. Yeah. And if the other thing, though, you know, if I go on holiday without my dogs, I miss them so much. So, I mean, what's it, the guests here, because you've got two dogs, you've got Murphy and Mitzi, what are the guests' reactions to your dog like?
Well, we make it very clear to people that we've got dogs before they come, you know. On the front page of the website, we sign off Karen, Rob, Jess and Mitzi and Murphy, the dogs. Mm. We also put it on the terms and conditions. Please don't come if you don't like dogs or are phobic. Yeah. But we get a lot of people, elderly guests particularly, who maybe travel a lot, used to have dogs and have decided not to have them anymore because they're travelling so much. Mm. And they love it. A lot of repeat guests come and say, where are Mitzi and Murphy? You know, they're not interested in us, they want to meet the dogs. Yeah. And Mitzi and Murphy are great B&B dogs because they love everybody,
yeah.
as you know.
Yeah. And I suppose at this point we should talk about Mitzi and Murphy. Mm-hmm. Now, they're both rescue dogs?
Yes. Murphy was 18 months when we got him. He was being left on his own for 10 hours a day. And he's a, well, we think he's a collie set across. Mm. And he's just got so much energy.
Yeah.
And he needs to be with people. He's a person dog.
Yeah.
So it's fantastic here. He's on the go all day and he loves to play ball. And then we got Mitzi 6 months later. Mm. She belonged to an old lady who became too ill to look after her, which was very sad. Mm. So Mitzi was a bit unhappy for the first few months when we got her because she was used to being a very much loved only dog.
Yeah.
But she loves it now. Mm. She loves Murph. She loves playing ball.
Yeah. They're lovely. They obviously sort of get on well and they're a good team, but they are quite different, aren't they, from one another?
Yes, yeah, so Murphy's definitely a people dog. He thinks he's a person and he's very bright. He's very intelligent.
Yeah.
He likes to carry the laundry from the rooms for me. He likes to take it into the laundry room. Whereas Mitzi's much more of a doggy dog. She's very instinctive. You know, she catches mice and she patrols a perimeters in the morning. She's always out there for 45 minutes checking we're all safe, whereas Murphy just goes out for a quick wee and then comes back in again and has his biscuits.
He's almost clown like isn't he, whereas she's quite, you can see she's quite serious and she's thinking things over.
It used to be really embarrassing in dog training because all you could hear, there'd be silence and there's thump 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 of Murphy's tail because always wagging. But yes, he's a clown and he likes to make people laugh. In training, if he did anything and I laughed, it would be the next 3 weeks he'd do exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
So I'd have to sit there and think really sad thoughts to stop myself grinning at him, because if I did, that would be it.
I know. And it's so difficult to fool a dog because they can read your body language and, you know, maybe the smell changes, or, you know, when you the pheromones or whatever you give off when you're amused. Mm. And it's so hard to fool them, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, my daughter's not very well at the moment. She's got some eye infection. She was really upset yesterday and both dogs were sort of coming up and trying to cuddle her. You know, they knew something was wrong. But,
yeah. Oh, they do, don't they?
Yeah.
Definitely. So having dogs and a business where sort of there's lots of people coming and going must bring its own, should we say, challenges. Mm-hmm. So what sort of implications are there when you have dogs and, you know, so many guests?
It is difficult because not everybody likes dogs. I do get people coming and just aren't interested at all. So you have to try and keep them away from the guests. I always try and suss out how people feel before releasing Mitzi and Murphy on them, because Murphy is a bit of a jumper-upper, which can be a problem. Mm. Some people love it and some don't. Once we had this very nice old lady staying and Murphy jumped up and the next thing we knew her elasticated skirt was around her ankles. Luckily she liked dogs, but it was a little bit embarrassing. And when we first opened the B&B, we had an old elderly dog and she was terrified of everything. And I didn't really appreciate getting an 18-month-old dog in, the difference.
Mm.
You know, Murphy really likes to see the guests and say hello, whereas the old dog just, you know, she would keep away from them.
Yeah.
So you do need to be a bit careful with them.
So if someone's thinking of going to a dog-friendly bed and breakfast or, you know, establishment of whatever kind with their dogs, what are the kind of things that they need to bear in mind to be a good guest?
I think to make sure they're clear on the sort of ground rules that people have, because all dog owners are different and all dogs are different. It's like, you know, parents and children, we all bring dogs up in a different way. So, you know, Mitzi and Murphy, for example, are allowed on the furniture in our part of the house, but we do ask guests not to allow their dogs on the furniture because the next guest may not like dogs, and it is very difficult to keep it immaculately clean with dog hairs and things. So, you know, if your dog is the sort of dog that's going to jump on furniture and the B&B is asked not to, then, you know, we need to respect that and consider whether it's the right B&B
for
the dog. Ask questions like, you know, do you need to pick up after the dog? Where do you put dog waste? Where are the bins? And just making sure you understand the rules and respecting them, I think. We try and have as few rules as possible here, but you just need some, so everyone's happy and knows what their responsibilities are, really.
Because I know some places like sort of you to crate the dog if you're going to leave it in the room, don't they?
Yes, I mean, some I know there's a local B&B, she allows dogs, but only in the kennels outside. We're very happy to have dogs in the room. If you think your dog's not used to being left alone, we do ask not to leave the dog in the room. We had one instance where someone left the dog in the room and it weed all over the carpet and it scraped the door, because it may be used to being left alone at home, but it's come to a strange place, you've left it, that dog doesn't know that it hasn't been abandoned, so...
All the smells are new and everything,
So if you're used to taking your dog away and it's used to behaving when it's away, then that's fine, but, you know, if you any concerns over it, then, you know, about respecting other people's property, really.
And sort of what's a real no-no? What are the real faux pas that you can commit as a dog owner taking your dog with you?
I would say, for us, it's letting the dogs chase the chickens. People think, oh, it's funny to watch, but, you know, it's the wildlife. The chickens don't particularly enjoy being chased. And our problem is Mitzi came to us as a chicken chaser and we trained her out of it. But as soon as another dog chases a chicken, she thinks she's got permission to do it again.
And, the rules have changed.
And also not, you know, one of the things is not bothering to clear up after your dog and that sort of thing. It's not nice for other guests.
No. And I think as well, when you do find somewhere that's genuinely dog friendly, you have to cherish them. I mean, we went to somewhere in Scotland, and as you say, she'd left little treats for us, you know, and treats for the dog. And just that little act of including the dog, it wasn't like, no, you can bring your dog if you like. It was, the dog's welcome, actually. And you think, we'll go back there because they know, you know, how to make you feel welcome as a whole family. It's to be cherished.
I run courses for B&B owners, and one of the things I say is, you know, there's a distinction between dogs allowed and dogs welcome. Children allowed, children welcome. You know, actually think about how you can make it easier for the dog owner. So we have information about days out where you can take your dog, pubs and restaurants locally that will allow dogs to go in, walks that you can go on with your dog that are dog-friendly. So it's just thinking, as a B&B owner, is thinking going a bit further than just saying dogs allowed. I mean, I love all dogs, so first thing I want to do is go and have a cuddle.
Yes. And it does, as you say, that I think that's what makes the difference, being an actual real dog lover rather than saying, we'll get more business, we'll get some dogs in. You know, that's the difference, isn't it? People can tell.
Yes, and for me, actually, it's a bit more relaxed when people come with dogs, because, you know, they're going to be a certain sort of person and they're going to act in a certain way, and it's you haven't got to worry too much about Mitzi and Murphy going up and saying hello, you know. So it's a bit more relaxing as a B&B owner, I think. But I think a B&B owner, if they're going to accept dogs, they need to be doggy people.
Definitely. And it does give you, it's an icebreaker, isn't it? Straight away, you've got something to talk about. You've got common ground, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, we had a lovely red setter come and stay this weekend. It's a gorgeous animal and, you know, immediately you're standing outside talking about the dog and chatting. Yes, it is common ground. Dog owners tend to be similar types of people.
Definitely. Now, you mentioned the courses that you run, and you've also written a book.
I've written an e-book, which is due to be published at the end of this month. There's a publisher who does legal documents and legal books for WH Smith, actually, and they approached me and asked me to do a how to run a B&B book, because there's been an incredible amount of interest in it this year. I think with the whole credit crunch, people being made redundant, I think people who had redundancy money, I've had a lot of people come on the course with redundancy money, which they're hoping to invest in a property, in a business of their own. So there's a lot of interest.
And do you have a website that people can find out more about you?
I have two websites.
Okay, right.
I'm very greedy. We've got shropshirebreakfast.co.uk, which is the B&B, and bedandbreakfastacademy.co.uk, which is the training website.
Okay, excellent.
Lovely.
Thanks, Karen.
Okay, thank you.
We have both those links on the Dogcast Radio site, as well as photos of the charming Murphy and Mitzi, and of course, the equally charming Karen. I think Buddy and I'd be right at home at Hopton House Bed and Breakfast, so it's just a pity I live too close to justify going to stay there. It is home to a dog after he has been there 3 nights. Finnish proverb. Buddy's Diary.
Hello, Buddy the Black Labrador here. My people have done it to me again. Brought another animal into our home. This time, two strange, fast, spiky creatures called kittens. They smell a bit like dogs, but sharper with a tang of something extra that I couldn't quite place at first. Kittens are apparently young cats. And I don't really like cats. I mean, I like them. Don't get me wrong, I'm a Labrador, I like everyone and everything. But the cats I've encountered make it hard to like them. They either run away, or they stand there staring at you, as if you've offended them just by approaching anywhere near them. Some do this really odd thing where they puff themselves up and make their fur stand on end. Now that's not fair, because I can only make my hackles, that's the fur along my spine, stand on end when I'm angry or excited. So they've started a game I can't join in with fully, and I hate it. The kittens in our house couldn't run away as they were stuck in the lounge with us. And even if they made themselves look as big as they possibly could, they'd still be pretty tiny. So when I went over to have a good sniff at them, they had no real option but to put up with it. Happily, after our initial meeting, they left me alone for most of the time. Then they developed a nasty habit of jumping up on the sofa right next to me when I was in the middle of a good snooze. And as they have gradually worked out that I am a big Labrador lump of softness, they've begun to take liberties with me, cuddling up to me on the sofa, edging nearer and nearer to my dinner bowl, that kind of thing. But of course, being the big warm-hearted dog that I am, I find it impossible to discipline them in any way. Star has no such reservations and gives them a good growling at if they push their luck with her. Funnily enough, both kittens put up with it from her. Perhaps they sense a worthy adversary in Star, but whatever it is, we have all found ways of getting along together happily. There are actually some advantages of having kittens in the house. When they were very little, they had special kitten milk, which tasted wonderful, so I got a lick of this as often as I could. Their special kitten food consists of little tiny pieces, which are ridiculously minuscule for my mouth, but which is so delicious it's well worth the effort of sneaking a mouthful if I can. And it is an effort because our people know how much Star and I like kitten food, and they've devised a very sneaky way of thwarting us. They put the kitten food on a sort of cat climbing frame about 3 feet off the ground. Now I'm not short, but I can't quite reach 3 feet high, so mostly I have to endure the tantalising smell without the lovely taste. However, kittens are apparently half kangaroo and they leap right up there and get stuck in. Now what goes in must come out. And for some reason, they are privileged enough to be allowed to take toilet breaks inside the house in a special litter-filled tray our people thoughtfully provided. I was so surprised when these tiki creatures knew straight away how to use the tray. It takes us dogs a lot longer to get the hang of where to pee and poop. Which brings me to the other advantage of sharing my home with cats. Cat poop. Don't judge me, I'm a dog. I find your human habit of shaking hands instead of sniffing back ends very off-putting. So let's just agree to differ, okay? But trust me, cat poop is a doggy delicacy. Especially when it's lightly coated with kitty litter. My people have noted my latest snack choice and are apparently in competition with me to get to it first. Goodness knows what they want it for, but they fall upon the litter tray the instant a cat has popped in, pooped and popped out again. They pick up the offending, or attracting, matter in a tissue and rush out of the room with it. I've never managed to see what they do with it, but there's always the flushing noise of that big water bowl immediately afterwards. And talking of disgusting, don't even get me started on what you humans put in that big flecking water bowl. Gross. Meanwhile, I've figured out what that extra tang is in the scent of a cat. You see, cats and dogs eat a similar diet, and we have a lot in common, but we have one major difference. Dogs have their individual aroma, but we all have a sweeter, softer, mellowed note to our smell. But a cat, even a kitten, still has a strong, zesty whiff of wildness. Which means that a dog can be a man's best friend, but a cat will only ever agree to be an acquaintance. Till next time.
A dog in the kitchen asks for no company. French proverb. It's getting closer to Christmas, and our thoughts are turning to ideas for presents for our loved ones, both human and canine. If you have a perfect suggestion of a present to delight your dog or a dog lover, let me know and I'll share it with all the Dogcast Radio audience. We always get our dogs presents, but to be honest, they have so much fun biting and clawing the wrapping paper off, the present inside isn't always investigated till later on. We even get our dogs an advent calendar with special treats in, and they always have some turkey with their regular food. How do you help make the holidays special for your dog? It's important to remember the many dogs in shelters and rescues still waiting for their forever home. Could you help make Christmas special for them? If you don't have time to help walk the dogs at your local shelter, they'll appreciate any donation you can make, such as treats or toys, to help keep their inhabitants happy. If you start now and just buy something small each week, by Christmas you should have a great stash of doggy goodies to deliver. Of course, at this time of year, our houses are full of things that our dogs don't often encounter the rest of the time. So it's worth checking out what might be harmful to them. For example, mistletoe berries. But how do you make sure your Christmas tree is dog-proof? And how do you ensure that one of my favourite parts of Christmas, chocolate, doesn't wind up being eaten by the dog, for whom it could have dreadful consequences? If you have tips for dog-proofing the festivities, let us know. When I was still living at home, my mum had a wonderful German shepherd called Ben. One Christmas when Ben was young, Mom had decorated her tree with the usual ornaments, but then added lametta strands. Now, lametta always makes me think of pasta, but actually, it's thin strips of colourful foil. We thought it looked very festive, but we were puzzled when after a few days we discovered the strands from the lower branches had disappeared. The answer came in time, when we noticed that wherever Ben had pooped in the garden, what he had left behind twinkled when the light caught it. He'd eaten the lametta strands that he could reach. Well, it did lend a decorative air to the garden, and thankfully it had no ill effects on his health. But in following years, my mum did not include lametta in her decorations. Till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs.
Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121-288-0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
What's happening when you hear woof, splat, meow, splat? It's raining cats and dogs.